of Dahye Keramat. Please stay with us for a special feature on this auspicious day, which is celebrated in the Islamic Republic of Iran as the Day of Virtuous Daughters. O Fatima, intercede for me for the reward of paradise, for indeed you have with Allah a lofty status. What we recited to you is the English translation of the famous Arabic phrase of ziyaratname, or standard form of salutation, that is being recited today in the Holy Qom by devotees returning into hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, if we take into account those reciting it from their homes all over the world while saluting this impeccable lady. Born in Holy Medina in 173 AH, corresponding to 789 AD, she was named Fatemeh, peace upon her, in honor of her great ancestress, the noblest lady of all times. Hazrat Fatemeh Zahra, peace upon her, the infallible daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. She was 10 years old when her loving father, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, was martyred through poisoning in the dungeon of Baghdad on the orders of the tyrant Harun al-Rashid, the self-styled caliph of the usurper Abbasid regime. She was renowned for her piety as well as for her knowledge and wisdom, to the extent many people, especially women, would approach her threshold to seek solutions to many illegal, religious, or social problems. She did not marry, since, like the Virgin Mary, peace upon her, the mother of Prophet Jesus, peace upon him, no person of her times was deemed worthy of her hand. Hazrat Fatemeh Masume grew into an impeccably virtuous lady whose prodigious thirst for knowledge enabled her to answer questions posed by even gray-bearded scholars while still a child of less than 7 years. It would be repetitive to recount the incident of a group of Iranians who, after performing the Hajj pilgrimage in Mecca, had come to Medina to pay respects at the Prophet's shrine and also to visit the seventh Imam for clearing doubts regarding some jurisprudential matters. The Imam happened to be out of the city, and they had no time to wait for his return. To their surprise, however, a series of satisfactory answers was provided to them by a little girl from behind the curtain when they chanced to meet the Imam on their way back to Iran, and for further satisfaction showed him the answers they had received from his house. He exclaimed with a smile, "Fedaha Abuha," which means, "May her father be her sacrifice." Without the least doubt, the group of Iranians on reaching their homeland may have briefed their friends and families on the virtues of the little girl of the Prophet's household, who, unknown to them, was destined to find her permanent resting place over 20 years later, at the age of 29, in an obscure desert city in Iran, which would one day achieve global fame, with scholars coming from all over the globe to acquire genuine knowledge about Islam. At the age of 28, she, along with several of her brothers, left Medina for distant Khorasan so as to reside near her eldest brother, Imam Reza, peace upon him, who had been forcibly taken to northeastern Iran by agents of the crafty Caliph Ma'mun. During her long and arduous journey, her caravan was attacked by Abbasid agents near the city of Save, 128 kilometers west of modern Tehran. As a result, many of her fellow travelers were martyred, and she turned towards Qom, where, on hearing the news of her arrival, the elders of the city came out in large numbers to greet her and escorted her in respect. Some 17 days later, tired from the journey and shaken because of the attack on her caravan, the noble lady left for her heavenly abode, plunging the followers of the Ahlul Bayt in profound grief. They laid her to rest in an orchard that soon turned into a site of pilgrimage. And today, her grand mausoleum attracts pilgrims from all over the world to the city, which has turned into the leading center for diffusion of the genuine teachings of Islam throughout the globe. Many of the foreigners visiting her shrine in Qom have embraced the truth of Islam, and after acquiring Islamic sciences, have gone back to their countries as missionaries, spreading the dynamic message of the school of the prophets, Ahlul Bayt. It is interesting to note that in 2010, a woman, celebrity of the West, who experienced enlightenment and became Muslim while sitting and contemplating in the holy mausoleum of Hazrat Masume, peace upon her, was Lauren Booth, the sister-in-law of former British Prime Minister Tony Blair. A broadcaster, journalist, and activist, Lauren Booth, fully observes the hijab while working as a freelance writer and media consultant in Britain. In 2012, she co-founded the UK charity Peace Trail. It was indeed divine providence at work, especially in view of the famous hadith of the Prophet, that of the 8 gateways to paradise, one opens through Qom. Without the least doubt, this particular gateway is none other than the sprawling golden-domed shrine of Fatima Masume, peace upon her, at whose doorstep, in accordance with Ayatul Wasila in the Noble Quran, true believers seek intercession with God Almighty, as is evident by the phrase mentioned at the beginning of this brief radio program. It also becomes clear to us why her grandfather, Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, had, over half a century before her birth, said in explicit words that Qom is the haram or sanctuary of us, the Ahlul Bayt. Her prime position in the stairway that leads to heaven could be gauged by the fact that of all the venerable ladies of the Prophet's progeny named Fatima, it is only Masume, peace upon her, who has such a grand mausoleum and whose intercession with God is so frequently sought day and night throughout the year. Of course, there is no lady superior to the noblest lady of all times, the Lady of Paradise, Hazrat Fatimatu Zahra, peace upon her. But since it was God's will that the Prophet's infallible daughter should be laid to rest in an unmarked grave at an unknown spot in Medina, where one day the godless Wahhabis would desecrate the graves of all godly persons, it is the shrine of Fatima Masume, peace upon her, that provides solace to the hearts of the true believers as the worthy substitute for her illustrious ancestress. No doubt her brother, Imam Reza, peace upon him, and her nephew, Imam Javad, peace upon him, had said, Whoever visits her tomb, aware of her exalted status, paradise is the reward.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Dozens of Palestinians have been injured during clashes with Israeli forces and illegal settlers throughout the occupied West Bank, including East Al-Quds, where Israeli extremists staged a hugely controversial march. This year's march was reportedly partaken by around 25,000 settlers, who were being accompanied and protected by Israeli forces. The settlers were heard chanting Islamophobic and anti-Palestinian slogans such as Death to Arabs and Shirin is dead, referring to veteran Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Aghla, who was assassinated by the Israeli military earlier this month. The Israeli settlers forced their way into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, performing religious rituals there. At the same time, Palestinians held counter-rallies across the occupied territories, waving Palestinian flag and chanting anti-Israeli slogans. In Ramallah, the protesters said, although the Al-Quds is occupied by Israel and surrounded by military checkpoints, it will always remain their eternal capital and the Al-Aqsa Mosque will always be a Muslim sacred site. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned that the so-called flag march in occupied East Al-Quds is a grave provocation against the Palestinian people and the Arab and Islamic nations, stating that the resistance will not hesitate to perform its duty of defending Palestinian sanctities and people. The Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Expatriates has condemned Israeli settlers' latest raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds, saying the Tel Aviv regime is fanning the flames of religious tensions by allowing such incursions into the holy site. Also, Iran has condemned Israeli forces' desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque and their attacks on Palestinians there. Foreign Ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh warned against Tel Aviv's latest adventurism and provocative moves. He praised Palestinian people's resistance against the regime and recalled the Palestinian cause as the top priority of the Muslim world. He said all freedom-seeking people around the world, especially the people and governments of Muslim countries, have a duty to join hands to wholeheartedly defend Al-Quds and stand up to the apartheid Israeli regime. The spokesman also called on the international community and organizations to fulfill their legal responsibility by stopping Israeli atrocities against Palestinians.
The idea of a national Israeli day is a sign of a group of colonists living in the past. They think they are living a century ago. It is a disgrace in today's world, of course, where we are supposedly past the era of colonialism, rejecting the idea of apartheid. And the responsibility for this, of course, does lie on the colonists themselves, but it also lies on the sponsors of that colony. There would not be a apartheid colony in Palestine today were it not for the fact that many of the NATO states, in particular Britain, France and the USA, are the sponsors of this colonization, this apartheid. The situation would be resolved a long time ago if those NATO sponsors had not been supporting this regime for so long.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, known to Jews as the Temple Mount and located in the occupied old city of Al-Quds, is a flashpoint. Under a 1967 deal between Israel and Jordan, the compound's custodian, non-Muslim worship is prohibited at the site. In defiance of the agreement, Israel allows settlers to enter the site and carry out religious rituals. Recently, there has been a sheer escalation of atrocities by the Israeli regime against Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Outraged by the Israeli aggression, Palestinian resistance groups have intensified their operations throughout the occupied territories. The clashes in Al-Quds had sparked fears of another armed conflict similar to an 11-day war in May last year between Israel and Gaza-based Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas.
But they don't understand really that the resistance that they provoke is the main reason why that regime is going to fall. The first reason that apartheid is going to be dismantled in colonized Palestine is because the resistance has been so persistent, so steadfast and so constant. The second reason is the delegitimization of this apartheid colony internationally. It is repulsing already people around the world. It's even repulsing many Jewish people.
Some around the world could argue it's only a flag parade and nothing more, but for Palestinians, the flag march is one ugly face of Israel's occupation. For Palestinians, Al-Quds is a red line and they will always defend it with all means possible. A senior Israeli official has traveled to the Saudi capital and met inside the royal palace with a high-ranking Saudi official. According to Israel's Channel 12, the visit was meant to coordinate security cooperation between the two sides, which included the alleged common threats posed by Iran. The visit was linked to the two sides' mutual interest in leveling up their relations. In March, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman said, "Riyadh does not look at Israel as an enemy, but looks to it as a potential ally," saying they have many interests that can pursue together. Riyadh and Tel Aviv have no formal diplomatic relations, although it is widely believed that they do have contacts behind the scenes. There are plenty of examples of this. In 2018, it was reported that the chief of staff of the Israeli army met his Saudi counterpart to discuss terrorism and the alleged threat from Iran. Saudi Arabia's decision to allow Air India flights to and from Tel Aviv to transit through Saudi airspace are tangible signs of a shift. When bin Salman was asked about Israel having a say on a stolen Palestinian land, he said he believes that the Jewish people have a right to a nation state in at least part of their ancestral homeland. U.S. President Joe Biden is going to travel to the occupied Palestinian territories. Biden administration officials are in talks with the Saudis about arranging a potential in-person meeting between Biden and the Saudi prince for the first time. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's advisor Eyal Hulata is expected to travel to the U.S. next week. Earlier this week, two senior U.S. officials reportedly visited Riyadh as the Biden administration is quietly mediating a Red Sea deal between Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Egypt that involves the transfer of two strategic islands, Tiran and Sanafir, in the Red Sea from Egyptian to Saudi sovereignty with Israeli consent. The deal could also pave the way for the official announcement of the normalization of ties between Riyadh and Tel Aviv. When asked about the report, Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Faisal bin Farhan refused to deny it, only saying more steps needed to be taken to find a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In 2020, Israel's then Premier Benjamin Netanyahu visited Riyadh and met with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. This year saw Washington brokering normalization of relations between the Israeli regime and some Arab states, including United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. Saudi Arabia's key Arab allies in the region. The trend of normalization has been roundly condemned by Palestinians as a brazen betrayal of their cause. Israel and Saudi Arabia have for years been conducting covert talks on diplomatic, security and business affairs, and now Washington is trying to improve ties with Riyadh. U.S. officials are even seeking to organize a meeting between Biden and the Saudi crown prince. This comes against the backdrop of the global energy crisis caused by the war in Ukraine. Russia-Ukraine conflict continues to rock the global energy market. The U.S. is finding itself increasingly reliant on Saudi Arabia, the world's largest crude oil exporter.
A Zionist entity like Israel, I can't really call them a country because they're not. Palestine is the legitimate country. Israel is usurped and stolen the land. So I would caution any nation. I look at what Israel has done to the United States, how they have infiltrated and used the Jewish population in the U.S. to influence our foreign policy in a manner that is no longer favorable to the American people, but instead is favorable to the government of Israel.
Saudi Arabia has refrained from normalizing ties with Israel, unlike Bahrain and UAE, saying it would not do so without a resolution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But Bin Salman calling Tel Aviv a potential ally could indicate that Riyadh has already betrayed the Palestinian cause, and admitting it overtly is only a matter of time.
The U.S. has been shocked by another deadly shooting incident. A gunman has shot dead 19 young children and two adults at an elementary school in the U.S. state of Texas. The carnage happened at a school in the city of Uvalde. The gunman has been identified by law enforcement as 18-year-old Salvador Ramos. The teenager is suspected of shooting his grandmother before the rampage. A U.S. Border Patrol official who was nearby when the shooting began rushed into the school and shot and killed the gunman. The shooter was wearing body armor as he carried out the attack.
I was just devastated. It's heart-rending for us as grandparents. We have children in the age vicinity that happened here. It's overwhelming.
In a speech from the White House, U.S. President Joe Biden said he was sick and tired of responding to mass shootings as he called for gun control. This is the deadliest U.S. school shooting since the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut, in which 20 children and six staff were killed.
Why are you here? If not to solve a problem as existential as this. This isn't inevitable. These kids weren't unlucky. This only happens in this country and nowhere else. Nowhere else do little kids go to school thinking that they might be shot that day.
The bloodshed has revived calls for gun control measures in the U.S. School shootings have become recurring emergencies in the U.S. There have already been 27 school shootings this year alone. 26 school shootings were recorded last year. The massacre at Robb Elementary School happened only 10 days since several people were killed in a racially motivated mass shooting in New York.
So to me, it's really two factors. It's troubled kids, troubled young people, and guns. And every country has troubled young people to some extent, but not every country has a system where you can get guns so easily.
Thank you. The U.S. has a unique gun culture with the right to possess firearms enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. The United States is the only nation in the world where civilian guns outnumber the people. There are 120 guns for every 100 Americans. No other nation has more civilian guns than people. Americans are estimated to own 393 million of the 857 million civilian guns available, which is around 46% of the world's civilian gun cache. In 2019, the number of U.S. deaths from gun violence was about 4 per 100,000 people.
The Republican Party, the Democratic Party, can't say anything about it because the colonial mode of production, the violence that's required by the colonial mode of production is what keeps, is the lifeblood for the Republican Party and the Democratic Party.
That's 18 times the average rate in other developed countries. Multiple studies show access to guns contributes to higher firearms-related homicide rates. The U.S. recorded the largest number of gun-related suicides in the world every year from 1990 to 2019. And no other developed nation has mass shootings at the same scale or frequency as the U.S. The issue of gun ownership and stricter control on arms has sharply divided the U.S. society.
So, no, there's no irony that the biggest purveyor of colonial violence is also the biggest supplier of guns. That's why they have hundreds of military installations. They, being the United States, has, hundreds of military installations around the world, Army, Air Force, Marines, and the Coast Guard, whatever else they have, and even in within the United States borders, the police department, sheriff department, the marshals, all those instruments of violence exist.
The powerful National Rifle Association is a key player here. The NRA Institute for Legislative Action is its lobbying division. Over its history, the organization has influenced legislation, participated in or initiated lawsuits, and endorsed or opposed various candidates at local, state, and federal levels. The U.S. is deeply divided over the issue of gun control, and events like the Uvalde tragedy do not change the entrenched views. However, there is no sign that Democrats will get any closer to passing tighter gun control legislation. Some Republicans are already accusing them of using this latest school shooting to further their own political objectives.
Talks to revive the 2015 Iran deal, known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, remain stalled after a year of intensive diplomacy. Senior diplomats from Iran and the P4+1 group, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, have held many rounds of talks in the Austrian capital, Vienna. The diplomatic initiative to restore the deal has become a long and complex saga. Whether negotiators will finally cross the finishing line is anyone's guess. All parties have acknowledged that there are a few remaining gaps that need to be bridged between Washington and Tehran before the deal emerges. But what's keeping the talks from further progress? It has been repeatedly said that Washington's refusal to remove Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps from its terrorism blacklist is the most important sticking point. But Iran's top diplomat has given a vastly different account of what is blocking the path of the negotiations. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian told the World Economic Forum on Thursday that the issue of the IRGC being on the U.S. blacklist of terrorist groups is a minor issue that has been exaggerated and magnified by the Israeli lobby, and that Iran's top priority is the interests of the nation. He also warned that American interests and foreign policy have been taken hostage by the Israeli regime. Israel has made no secret of its opposition to the 2015 deal and diplomacy with Iran. It has been engaged in a not-so-covert campaign to derail the Vienna negotiations. U.S. President Joe Biden was a vociferous critic of Trump's unilateral withdrawal from the JCPOA in May 2018. During his presidential campaign, he pledged to work to rejoin the agreement. But has he done so? Iran's top diplomat says that has not been the case so far.
The fact that the United States, under the Biden administration, has failed to return to compliance with the agreement shows that the United States is not really interested in a rules-based international order, because one of the most basic pillars of international law by the United States' own agreement are United Nations Security Council resolutions. And again, it's binding.
Amir Abdullahian told the World Economic Forum that Biden's policy towards Iran has not been different from Trump's hostile approach. The Iranian foreign minister said the U.S. president must decide now whether he wants to waste time or courageously return to complying with U.S. commitments under the 2015 deal. His comments come after U.S. Special Envoy for Iran, Robert Malley, said the prospects of a return to the Iran nuclear deal are tenuous at best. Malley made the remarks on the same day that the Biden administration unveiled new sanctions on Iran. The U.S. Special Envoy for Iran noted, however, that Washington still believes it is in the national security interests of the United States to try to salvage the 2015 agreement. The future of the hard-earned international deal remains unclear and could unravel completely if Washington fails to return to its commitments. Meanwhile, Israel is doing its utmost to prevent any deal between Washington and Iran, just as it did before the JCPOA came into existence in 2015.
No group and no block of people has more power and influence in the United States than Jewish leaders in shaping how Americans think and American attitudes. And that's not only true, but it's especially true with regard to Iran. The American media is overwhelmingly very hostile to Iran. And this is in keeping with what Jewish leaders and all those who support Israel really want.
Will the administration of Joe Biden be able to withstand pressure exerted by the Israeli lobby and act based on America's national interests?
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إلهي ومولاي أجريت علي حكما اتبعت فيه هوى نفسي ولم أحترس فيه من تزيين عدوي فغرني بما أهوى وأسعده على ذلك القضاء فتجاوزت بما جرى علي من ذلك بعض حدودك وخالفت بعض أوامرك فلك الحجة علي في جميع ذلك ولا حجة لي فيما جرى علي فيه قضاءك وألزمني حكمك وبلاءك
Dear listeners, In this part of the Divine Kumail supplication, we read, وَقَدْ أَتَيْتُكَ يَا إِلَهِي بَعْدَ تَقْصِيرِي وَإِسْرَافِي عَلَى نَفْسِي. Now I have turned to you, my Allah, after my shortcomings and my immoderation toward myself. مُعْتَذِرًا نَادِمًا, proffering my excuse. Regretful. مُنْكَسِرًا مُسْتَقِيلًا, broken and regretful. مُسْتَغْفِرًا مُنِيبًا مُقِرًا مُذْعِنًا مُعْتَرِفًا, apologizing, asking forgiveness, repenting and acknowledging, submissive and confessing. لَا أَجِدُ مَفَرًّا مِمَّا كَانَ مِنِّي, I find no place to flee from what occurred through me. وَلَا مَفْزَعًا أَتَوَجَّهُ إِلَيْهِ فِي أَمْرِي, I have no place of escape to which I may turn in my affairs. غَيْرَ قَبُولِكَ عُذْرِي, other than your acceptance of my excuse. وَإِدْخَالِكَ إِيَّايِ فِي سَعَةٍ مِّن رَحْمَتِكَ, and your entering me into the compass of your mercy. Brothers and sisters, Imam Ali alayhi salam in this section mentions all traits that attract Allah's mercy and forgiveness. Concentration in worship, moderation in desires, regretful apology, brokenness, asking for forgiveness, repenting, confessing to sins, and seeking refuge to Allah. We have already mentioned that there are some etiquettes and requisites for supplication. The first of which is mentioned by Imam Ali alayhi salam, وَقَدْ أَتَيْتُكَ يَا إِلَهِ, I have come to you. This means I have come to you both physically and by my heart. This is among the most important requisites for acceptance of a prayer. Imam, at the end of this section, is asking the Almighty Allah to accept his excuse and to enter him through the compass of his mercy. وَإِدْخَالِكَ إِيَّايْ فِي سَعَةٍ مِّن رَحْمَتِكَ, this is because the reality of prayer is lying in the turning of the heart towards Allah. If the heart becomes occupied with other than Him, other than Allah, of these worldly distractions, of these worldly materialistic issues, then the supplicant has not been able to actualize the reality of prayer. A divine narration says, O Musa, call me with a pure heart and a truthful tongue. And this is exactly what the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam in his will told to Imam Ali alayhi salam. Allah does not accept the prayer of a heedless heart.
My God, my Master, you decreed a law for me, but instead I obeyed my own low desires, and I did not guard myself against the allurements of my enemy. He deceived me with vain hopes, whereby I was led astray, and fate helped him in that respect. So I transgressed some of the limits set for me by you, and I disobeyed some of your commandments. You therefore have a just case against me in all those matters, and I have no plea against your judgment which you passed against me. I have therefore become liable to your judgment and afflictions.
Thank you, Allah. So good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So Imam alayhi salam says, I have turned to you, my Allah, after my shortcomings, after my immoderations toward myself. وَقَدْ أَتَيْتُكَ يَا إِلَهِي بَعْدَ تَقْصِيرِي وَإِسْرَافِي,
Imam is at first turning his heart towards Allah. During all this divine command supplication, we can realize that the heart of Imam Ali alayhi salam is turning toward Allah. It is attentive to him during the prayer. And there is not a sense of heedlessness and hardness of the heart. And these two are from among the hurdles that stop the heart from attaining the state of being turned toward Allah. And this is what we have been ordered. We have been recommended that while we are reciting the transmitted supplications, we must create this state, an ambience of prayer within ourselves. We must be cautious of our hearts falling behind our tongue. I mean, sometimes the tongue goes on and on talking about what the specific traits of Allah are, reciting those transmitted prayers, but the heart is not coming along with it. The heart falls short. This is what causes the tongue to be busy with the recitation of the supplication while the heart is engaged with the worldly distractions. Let us have a look at one interesting and important word of the mystic jurist, Sheikh Jawad Maliki Tabrizi, may Allah have mercy on him. He says in his valuable and instructional book, Al-Muraqabat, know that you cannot attain the good of prayer and dua and the response and ijabah to your dua unless your innermost secret, your spirit, and your heart are all qualified by the properties of prayer. Qualification by its properties means that the originator of the prayer should be your innermost secret, should be your spirit, and that should be your heart. He is completely referring to this turning of the heart towards Allah. So Imam Ali alayhi salam, in this part and section of the Divine Kumay supplication, starts saying, وَقَدْ أَتَيْتُكَ يَا إِلَهِ, I have turned to you. I have turned my heart towards you. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be the most close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass-bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular. The engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. The contemporary ceramics exhibition kicks off at the Villa d'Atres Art Foundation near the French city of Avignon. The exhibit showcases nearly 130 artworks of all sizes. Some are so big they are put on display outdoors. The foundation has created these modern forms from roughly 100 artists from all over the world. The exhibit displays an exceptional diversity of eclectic works presenting sophisticated skills and artistry. Participating artists say working with clay and playing with glazes always produces a unique item that often generates a profoundly universal reaction. The goal of the event is to show how ceramic art has returned to the forefront of the contemporary art scene. The annual Vivid Life Festival has returned to Sydney after being cancelled 2 years in a row due to the coronavirus pandemic. The event kicked off with fireworks and lighting the sails of the Sydney Opera House. Iconic structures like the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Museum of Contemporary Art Australia are part of a series of new canvases this time around. As an added treat, the 2022 festival also has the longest continuous light walk in the history of the event. Plus, this year's highlights include a choreographed light show by 600 drones. Both residents and tourists have been anticipating the return of the show.
I saw it about 8 years ago, I think, and it's just got better and better, as far as I can tell. I mean, the Opera House is the most amazing canvas possible to project, this just amazing digital artwork. The vibrancy of it, the colour of it, the animation of it, the explosiveness of it, the colour just bursts out in just amazing ways. That the snakes, the chameleons, the lizards crawling across it.
The Harbour City will glow with 50 light installations, the projection artworks, as well as over 100 musical events. Vivid Sydney is an annual festival that lasts for 23 nights, infusing art, innovation and technology while collaborating with boundary-pushing artists. In 2019, the festival attracted millions of attendees. The event is owned and managed by the Tourism and Major Events Agency of the Government of New South Wales. Chilean scientists believe they have found the world's oldest living tree in a lush green forest in the south of the country. The scientists say their study shows an ancient cypress known as the Great Grandfather might have beaten the record for the world's oldest tree by six centuries. The bristlecone pine tree in eastern California is the current record holder with over 4,800 years of age. The scientist who led the study says the sample they extracted and other dating methods suggest that the Chilean cypress with a 4 meter thick trunk is over 5,000 years old.
We could count all the rings, but we know it's not the tree's age. It's an estimation of what we call a minimum age. So for this kind of tree, the scientific challenge is to estimate with science the part that we do not see and that is missing. And that is what we did with the millennial Alersi. This method tells us that 80% of all possible growth trajectories give us an age of this living tree greater than 5,000 years. There's only a 20% chance that the tree is younger.
Borisovich is, however, concerned about visitors harming the tree, which is located in the Costero National Park. He says visitors are still able to circle the tree's base, step on its roots, and even take pieces of its bark. The tree is a conifer native to Chile and Argentina and can grow to heights of up to 45 meters.
The world's oldest living man has just turned 113 years and says he's going to be around at least 10 more years. Good for him. Born on May the 27th, 1909 in Venezuela, Juan Vicente Perez Mora is still in pink of his health and memory and does not take medication. He has no trouble recalling his childhood marriage and the names of his siblings, children, and grandchildren. He has 41 grandchildren, by the way. So what is the secret behind a long life? Work hard, rest on holidays, go to bed early, love for God, and always carry him in your heart. The Guinness World Records declared Perez Mora the oldest living person last week. The meadows in the foothills of the Swiss Alps have turned white these days, with locals calling it May snow. But it has nothing to do with snow. It's all about narcissus blooms covering the hills above the town of Montreux. Locals call the scene May snow because it looks like a blanket of snow from a distance. The flowers have been a tourist attraction since the 19th century, but factors such as urbanization have caused their decline in the past few years.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Humans have disrupted the turtle survival for years due to their greed for meat, eggs, skin, and shells. But the decreasing population of the species is creating conscience of conservation. Cambodians have released hundreds of turtles of an endangered variety into the wild on World Turtle Day. About 600 Cantor's giant soft-shell turtles were let into a river in northeastern Cambodia. After people collected the species from a holding pool, Cambodian monks blessed the tiny creatures, then set them free. The Wildlife Conservation Society was the organizer of this event. It said that only a few records of Cantor turtles have remained in Laos, while they have mostly been wiped out in Vietnam and Thailand. The body has so far released over 1,500 hatchlings into the wild in 2022. Artists in a small town in the United Kingdom have created a massive bumblebee mural, hoping to raise awareness about this vanishing species. The mural was painted on the playing field of a primary school in the town of Haptonbridge. It was debuted on International Bee Day. The artist used paints typically used to draw lines for football pitches. Scientists say rising temperatures and heavy pesticide use are contributing to the decline in the number of bumblebees across Europe and North America. They say the population reduction rate is consistent with mass extinction of a species altogether. Children at a school have also created a wildflower meadow to help encourage bees to pollinate. A print art exhibition chronicling nearly a century's worth of artistic achievements by Chinese woodcarver has been unveiled in the city of Suzhou near Shanghai. The carved into wood exhibit features nearly 80 of Huang Yongyu's wood blocks and prints. Woodblock printing is a form of Chinese art dating back hundreds of years. In this form, patterns are carved out of a thick sheet of wood to create a type of multi-layered surface. Then ink is applied in various stages to print the image and its colors. The humble 98-year-old artist said during his years of practicing art, he learned that sincerity mattered more than technique. The exhibition was launched in collaboration between Suzhou Museum and the Beijing Fine Art Academy.
Persian fallow deer is a unique but endangered species known for its sleek and spotted body. In this report, our correspondent Youssef Jalali takes us on a quick tour around one of the world's few protected shelters of Persian fallow deer in Iran's city of Sari.
We had to keep quiet and avoid making any sounds to film them, as they are shy and swift, and the slightest sound could send them sprinting and jumping away. Over 60 Persian fallow deer roam in Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge in Iran's northern city of Sari. The endangered species is carefully protected here to be safe from predators and poachers.
The Persian fallow deer is native to Iran's Khuzestan province, but due to loss of habitat and threats posed to them by predators such as jackals and wild cats, they are endangered and need to be protected in semi-natural refuges like this one.
Persian fallow deer are mainly indigenous to open woodland areas spanning from East Mediterranean coasts to West and Southwest Iran. By 1875, they had gone extinct in all of their main habitats, except in Southwest Iran. After a captive breeding program, the population has rebounded from only a handful of deer in the 1960s to over 200 individuals in Iran.
Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge is a 55 hectares wide. It was introduced in 1962 as a shelter for the Persian fallow deer when the species was on the brink of extinction. At that time, five deer were captured and translocated to this refuge. Over the past six decades, their number have been multiplied through captive breeding.
The Persian fallow deer is a rare ruminant mammal belonging to the family Cervidae. They're physically larger than other fallow deer, and their antlers are bigger and less palmate. Their special beauty has turned this sanctuary into a hot tourist attraction in Iran's north.
This sanctuary is a tourist destination for visitors who would like to see the Hyrkanian forests in Iran's north and at the same time enjoy the wildlife and learn about efforts made to save the Persian fallow deer from extinction.
In 2015, the Persian fallow deer was registered in the IUCN Red List of Threatened Species. Dashtinaz authorities hope through continued captive breeding, the population of these special creatures will soon reach the desired number, and hopefully they will be reintroduced to their natural habitat in southwest Iran.
While they live far from their original habitat, these alluring creatures feel at home here, where they will be safe from the dangers lurking outside, which may lead to their extinction. So here, Persian fallow deer continue to embellish the nature and charm visitors with their beauty. Youssef Jalali from Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge in Sari.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.